Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Hello.
Derek.
Good day, sir.
It's almost fall.
Yes.
It's fall-ish.
It's fall-ish. We're in the neighborhood of fall.
Yeah. I don't remember when the fall turns.
21st or something. 21st.
Yeah somewhere yeah. in there.
21st of June, 21st of May, 21st of September, 21st of December.
So that's like this weekend sort of thing.
Yeah.
Already? Really?
And if I got the dates wrong, somebody let me know, because I always think it's the 21st.
21st, 22nd. Yeah, 21st is always
every quarter on the 21st.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Anywho.
But yes, yeah, so we're in the neighborhood of fall, and so I'm heading north in next Wednesday. I'm heading north. Guys trip up North Sudbury, Chinoguchi, and whatever area, right? Crown Island Camping.
Right.
And so I'm looking forward to seeing the leaves change, but we were at Bon Echo there, what, a week and a half ago or so? Mm-hmm. And the color was already changing there in Bon Echo, so it was really neat to see. And we were kind of surprised, because it's like, well, Bon Echo isn't that far north.
Right.
So it's just up below Algonquin Park type thing, so Algonquin must be showing colors now too. But it's just that reminder.
Yeah,
right?
But you know what? It's been warmer here too.
It's been crazy warm, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not on the weekend. It's not the, as I understand it, it's not the temperature that makes the leaves change. It's the reduction in sunlight. The leaves aren't getting enough chlorophyll.
Yeah, all the chlorophyll's turning into chloroform, and it's knocking the leaves out onto the ground.
Wrong word.
Next week, we'll discuss some other types of sciences. September 23rd or 22nd. So it's this weekend.
Yeah.
The autumnal equinox.
Yeah. So it's the lack of sunlight. So we got a lot shorter days now. So they're not getting as much chlorophyll, and you're not enough sunlight. And so you're going to get the leaves change color.
But I'm predicting an easy fall up until
January?
No. I'm saying towards the end of November.
Yeah.
We're going to have good weather up until then. It just has that feeling this year.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to get cold, like really cold.
You don't think?
Not till the end of November, December.
Mm-hmm. Unpredictable this year. You can't, any year in the last decade or so, it's so unpredictable.
And usually people, this is the time we all end up going salmon fishing, because the rains, September rains.
Yeah. Yeah.
There really haven't been, have there?
There's been, I live right by Bonneville Creek in Bonneville, and my goodness, there's a lot of people out fishing.
How many fish are there, though?
It's a lot.
Are they running?
Oh, yeah, they're running. Yeah.
Because we always base it, the fish don't really start running until the rains.
Well, it's started. You don't see the massive clumps of salmon and stuff, mm-hmm. but they're running, and people out there catching them. A lot of people are getting tickets because they feel that they should be netting them or jigging them. Anyway, so we've had some conservation officers out and some other police out there watching the crowds, because people are doing stupid stuff. And I'm starting to hear about the locals going down there and saying, what are you doing, buddy? You can't do that. And so people are saying stuff, because it's crazy. There's so many people pulling fish out of the creek. It's like, oof. But the conservation officers did say that they checked upstream, and they are seeing fish getting past all the clump of people at the dam, at the fish ladder and stuff. And so they're ticketing people fishing at the dam. They're ticketing people who are netting, ticketing people that are jigging. And so it's
snagging. And
Yeah.
We ran into one guy. My brother has no time for that.
Yeah.
This is years ago.
Yeah.
And the guy just looks at him and says, I can do whatever he wants. Says, oh, so can I. Hmm. He took out his knife and cut the guy's line.
There you go.
Oops. Yeah, my brother, you fish properly.
Yeah.
Or you don't fish at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah.
So.
One of the issues we have is, I don't want to drag this conversation out too much, but one of the issues we've seen a lot is you'll see somebody with a 5-gallon pail, and it's just filled with fish roe,
mm-hmm.
and there's dead fish littering the river. So
they're just harvesting.
They're harvesting the eggs and throwing the dead fish back in the river.
Yep.
It's like, what are you doing, man?
Yeah. Yeah, so. there's a lot of bad ethics.
Mm-hmm.
But not everybody. You can't lump everybody with one group sort of thing. So
yeah,
but it is fall paddling, you know, it's going to start getting cooler,
mm-hmm.
and Love going to the Northern Lakes at this time of year.
It is. Trips. I love those crisp mornings. I love being able to wear a nice warm jacket or sweater and paddling along. And, you know, you get the crisp mornings with you might get a slight freeze on the very near end of the shore. And
cool, it's sunny days.
Yes, cool. Yeah, sunny, mid-warm days and cool nights. And it's just
enough for a hoodie.
Yeah.
But not enough for like a winter jacket or something heavy.
And you barely break a sweat on a portage. And yeah, it's a lovely time to go camping and canoeing. I love
sitting by the fire, drinking a hot beverage, just enjoying the day.
Yeah.
I find that I don't, I'm not as active on fall trips.
Yeah. I sit around a lot.
I like getting out there. I'll attend a base camp more and then do a little, I'm just going to go over in that lake today and I'm back. I don't want to haul all my gear, you know, through 17 portages and 84 lakes. And
well, it's also like for me, I like that too. I like base camping in the fall, but it's also strategic because the weather can be very unpredictable and freezing rain and sleet and stuff is not fun.
It is. Safety third.
I quickly learned when I first started doing Algonquin trips back in the early 2000s, I quickly learned the value of spending a little extra money on like proper gear, like proper rain jackets, because like, you know, hey, this rain jacket was only $25. What a deal. Yeah. It's like wearing a Ziploc bag.
I have, I'm sure it's still in a closet somewhere. My first rain jacket. Oh, this is great. It says it'll keep all the rain out. Yeah. But it didn't breathe.
Yeah.
So all that sweat on the inside. And then, you're getting wet. And then when you take that rain jacket off under the tarp or whatever.
Your sleeves are wet. And
what's going on? Everything you're wearing is soaked with sweat.
Why is there steam coming off of me?
So, yeah, you just got to do your research on stuff like that and what you're going to wear and time of year. And
definitely
check the weather.
Mm-hmm.
I make a point of printing off the weather and putting it in my map case. Yeah, there's a chance it's going to turn. It's done that drastically on a couple trips over the years. But even the best of times,
the weather network doesn't really nail it.
Yeah, yeah. But at least you have a guideline to go by. This is what it's supposed to be like.
Yeah, if it's calling for like 50 millimeters rain and high winds, chances are
you're going to get
something.
Wind and rain.
You're going to get something.
Yeah, yeah. But as our buddy Marcus always said, if it says 40% chance of rain, that's 60% chance of fun.
Yes.
Again, no bugs. That's your favorite part, I know.
Mm-hmm.
There is absolutely no bugs.
Yeah.
Sitting there and watching the big V's of geese and stuff flying south.
Yeah.
We counted 56 of them in one flock there when we were up in Temagami.
Yeah.
They were just starting to head south. Towards the end of our trip, they were starting to head south.
We've been noticing at work that all the cormorants that poop in our cars, most of them are gone. We're down to just like a dozen or so cormorants.
So you're down to a twice a week car wash now, not a daily. Well,
so the cormorants are mostly all gone. You can still smell it because where they hang out, you can barely breathe when you walk through the parking lot. So we're not getting as much poop on the cars, but what we are getting is all the other small birds that are eating all the ripe berries. So now we're getting purple poop on our car.
Yes.
So in the summer, it was white cormorant poop, and now it's purple whatever bird poop.
Fall purple poop.
And bright purple, too. It's like, whoa, what's that?
Yeah.
There's this nice brand spanking new white car parked next to me. I might have had like one or two spots, but this guy was covered in purple poop. And it was a white car, so it really stood out. It's like, ooh, he's going to be not happy when he gets past
it. He's not going to be happy.
You could tell by looking at the car, like in the wheel wells. You glance down, it's like, this is a brand new car. He's going to be not happy.
Because you can't let it dry on because that ruins your paint job.
Well, it's like acidic or basic. It's one of the two.
Acidic, yeah.
Yeah, so it just erodes the clear coat. And
Yeah. See, that's why I don't wash my truck after I come out from Tomogamy.
You got to keep the mud on, protect
it. Keep the mud on to protect it, right?
Yeah.
Keep the UV off of it.
Exactly.
I've been so busy since I got back. I came out of the bush, and the minute I got into cell phone reception, my phone went bonkers.
Bing, bing, boop, beep, bing, bing.
Oh, nonstop. And there's a few things that happened at work that I'm just like, you got to be kidding me. This did not happen. And yeah, so we've been... Our company right now is in the hands of a little old ancient retired guy from Mexico and a little old retired ancient guy from Italy. There's a story behind that, yeah. But at the end of the day, that's what it comes down to. Oh, it's so bad you gotta laugh sort of thing. but no, I'm supposed to be heading out on a trip. My regular Thanksgiving week trip.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're supposed to be heading out at Halloween there, the end of October. So beginning of October, end of October, and there's a potential 4-day trip that same weekend.
Uh-huh.
So.
Hmm.
Which trip do I go on, the 3-day one or the 4-day one?
You do the 4-day one because I need a paddle partner.
But the 3-day one, me, if I don't do the 3-day one, that means Tracy gets left at home.
Oh.
So.
Yeah, do the one with Tracy.
I don't have to live with you, buddy.
Exactly. I can paddle solo.
Yeah, I. You know what? We're discussing things, what we're actually doing and stuff. The 3-day one we were supposed to have made reservations for, but because I have certain things that come out of on my credit card every month.
Mm-hmm.
And there is one place I used it that I never use it at. And then I came out and I found out there was a problem with my credit card.
Oh.
There was like 30 some odd scam charges.
Oh, yeah.
So there was a few things overseas. So I called the lady at the bank and she says, have you been doing any international...
No, I haven't.
I said, oh, in Japan? And she stopped and like quiet for a second. And I said, because my daughter's in Japan now and she has, like, I got a copy of the credit card for her so that in emergencies. Yeah. Says, nope, nothing from Japan. Said, well, I've been in the back country on a canoe trip for 10 days with no stores, no cell service, no internet, nothing. So anything that happened between the 1st and the 10th.
Yeah.
Was not me.
Not me.
Except for one. It was
an auto payment
thing. And she's listing all these things. Somebody tried to buy something from a motorcycle shop in Australia. And I said, if I bought another motorcycle home, my wife would kill me. Yeah, all these weird little and small things. Like $3, 5 cents.
Really?
Yeah. Just to test to see if it can go through.
Yeah.
Because if a $2 thing goes through... Oh, well, how much more can we get?
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And then but they had to put a hold on my credit card.
Mm-hmm. So you don't have a credit card.
So I don't have a credit card right now, so I can't make reservations.
Yeah.
New one's on its way. But as well, any of my pre-authorized payments aren't going through.
Exactly.
And when I get my new card, I've got to go to all these places and reauthorize.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my God. And it's the only... non-regular place I use it. I never use it for anything non-regular,
mm-hmm.
except once.
Hmm.
And then all of a sudden...
Yeah. Hmm. So do you know where it was? What the source was?
Yep.
Oh.
If it looks like a duck, smells like a duck, and quacks like a duck, chances are it's a duck. But anyway, so yeah, I had that chit-chat with them as well, so they're going to investigate all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, not too happy. So anyway... we needed to make reservations if we're going to this place. And since I don't have a credit card to make reservations right now, I haven't made reservations yet. So it may end up being the 4-day trip.
Yeah.
Right? So
I always use tap on my phone because I have my card registered. So I need a fingerprint. So nobody ever sees a number scanned. Nobody ever sees me put in a code, a punch, like the digit, 4-digit, 6-digit code.
Right. Now, is that your Visa or your debit?
No, it's Visa.
Okay.
Yeah.
Technology is great, but...
I know, it's risky, eh?
Yeah, I don't like using...
Mm-hmm. And if I buy anything online, I always go through PayPal.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there's a level of protection there that PayPal's covering the payment. This is not, I'm not going to directly to a company and give them my card information.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Anyway.
I've been lucky so far. Let's call it luck because
you know
somebody's going to get me eventually.
Eventually it's going. So mm-hmm. Anyway, back to fall paddling, canoe yes. trips and stuff like that. You don't do the fall fishing, do you? Canoe trips. Because that's a time you want to go out first thing in the morning.
Yeah.
And then you can come back and you just take your time, cook up. I'm more likely, because like I say, when I'm on a canoe trip in the summer, I get up. My breakfast is like oatmeal, granola bar, coffee,
mm-hmm.
wolf that down, pack up, and I'm gone.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not the, I'm going to make pancakes today and make some blueberries.
Yeah.
And let me get the bacon. Let me get the French press out and I'll yes, make a good
exactly.
coffee. Yeah, that's not me.
Leaving campsite by noon.
Yeah. Yeah. So Sean was gone by 8 and we're still here at 11. Well, we might as well make lunch now. You know, I'm one of those guys, but in the fall paddling, when I'm doing the bush or the base camping, and I know I'm just going to go out and visit this and stuff like that.
Yeah,
there's more of a chance of me sitting there and making the pancakes. And eggs or something. Well, I can't say eggs. I can't even remember the last time I took eggs into the backcountry.
I've done it. It's very rare. I've done it more with Mike than with family or solo. Like it's a bit of a pain to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But when I go with the boys, like on, we used to do the, camping with the boys and Noir River and so on. We do special breakfasts where there's scrambled eggs, smoked salmon and bacon, and we put it in wraps and
No.
But that group, everybody wanted something, some cooked meal in the morning. And if I'm alone, I'll just have one of those breakfast bars.
Yeah.
And
see, out of everything on a canoe trip, and Trace and I talked about this in Tomogamy, everything on a canoe trip, I don't mind doing this, I don't mind doing that, I don't mind doing this, I don't mind doing that. I hate cooking. I shouldn't say I hate cooking. I hate taking the time.
Yes.
To cook.
Yeah. I like cooking, but I like, it has to be, like when I go with Mike, me and Mike usually cook a nice meal.
Mm-hmm.
It's different. It's what we do. But if I'm solo, I don't cook a meal.
No?
I'll boil some water and rehydrate something.
Oh, I'm so team rehydrate these days. You know? But I mean, I still do the first night or two, I'll do something fresh, like mm-hmm. a steak or chicken or something like that. But after that, it's just like, you know what? I just...
At Bon Echo, I made my pickle mustard pita thing again.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's really good. I really enjoy it.
Pickle mustard.
Pickle mustard on a pita.
Oh.
It's very good.
I'll take your word for it. But, no, I don't enjoy taking the time
mm-hmm.
to have to cook.
Yeah.
Now, mind you, at the end of the night, if we're sitting there around the fire... I'll put the reflector oven on and think nothing of it.
Sure, yeah.
But when it comes dinner time, mind you, as well, I would rather, if I had to cook something,
mm-hmm.
I would rather it's dinner as opposed to breakfast. I can't even remember the last time I cooked lunch
mm-hmm.
or stopped for a lunch.
Yeah.
That wasn't like pepperoni sticks and granola bars, trail mix, cheese strings or something like that. Like, I can't remember the last time I actually had to open a pack to grab the food out so I could make a lunch.
Yeah.
It's just like, okay, scarf back a granola bar at the end of a portage and off we go sort of thing, right? But, I mean, that's me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, but yeah, can't wait till the cooler days, sitting there, just nice, relaxing. And you paddle slower too, I find, when you're not in...
Yeah.
If you're base camping.
Yeah.
And you're enjoying it.
There's no...
Because there's no rush to get anywhere.
You're heading out and coming back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, oh, okay, I got to get to that lake. Got to go to these portages. Got to set up camp.
Yeah. Man on a mission.
Water and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Whereas when you're base camping, nice, cool. Yeah. There's just something about fall.
Yeah.
Fall camping and canoeing and paddling that's just... Yeah,
it's awesome. It's a mix when I do it with the family. It's a mix of base camping or travel camping. Like Killarney, we did travel. But it wasn't big days. It was like we'd be off site by about 9, and we'd be at the new site by noon. Right. Yep.
So because there was a couple of days where Trace and I were doing that sort of thing. It was like, you know what? It's just like two portages, and they're not long portages.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're not busting our hump to get across them. You know, here, let's carry five packs in the canoe at the same time because you got to get across. Yeah. You're enjoying that. And you're enjoying the walk across the portages, and you're paddling. Like, you're not just going nuts paddling speed.
One thing I like about, like, just because you mentioned portage, is like, so when you do, like, if you're in a rush and you pack light, you're doing a single carry and you're off again, oftentimes I find if I do the canoe on one trip and then go back and get the pack, I get to walk with nothing and look at the portage and smell the flowers. And
yeah, and see, we always go with the packs first because that way we can look at the terrain and everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that way okay, this is going to be easy with the canoe or not.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because nothing like, this all of a sudden there's a cliff there going straight up that you just smashed the front of your canoe into. Yeah.
Yeah, into fall camping.
Yeah.
Looking forward to it.
Bill Mason used to say that. Like, he would take his gear to the one end and then enjoy the walk back.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Looking at the scenery, the woods, the birds. Yeah. Coming back on one, and I got a picture of it. I never did post my pictures from Tomogamy yet either. That's how busy I've been, man. there was one we're walking back, and there was this like old metal cup hanging from a tree. Just a small thing. So somebody must have dropped it off their pack or something, and somebody picked it up and put it there, thinking somebody will come back for it and see it. But it had been there for so long, it had moss and stuff on it.
Oh, did you get pictures of it?
Yeah, so it's like, that's pretty cool to see that sort of, which you're not going to see with a canoe on your head.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, I don't know if it's still there, but on my Facebook, one of my profile pictures is an old mossy-covered sneaker.
Oh, that's the one. Is that the one you took in Algonquin with the family?
No, it was in Bowmanville, south of the 401. Oh, is it? It's an old, used to be an old orchard or whatever, right?
Okay. And I thought there was the one that you took up with the family in Algonquin.
This, but it's a beautiful shot of a sneaker with green moss on it.
Yeah.
And
that's me at the gym.
Yeah. And right next to that sneaker with the green moss on it was an old train overpass that no longer has tracks. So that's the painting or the graffiti that I have of the robot with the heart.
Right.
So they're both pictures were taken. I don't change my profile picture often.
Next to that old sneaker was the body of the guy that was trying to jog.
Yeah, I do. I really only find time for stuff like that in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
It's better colors. The light of the day is better.
And not as school starts too, right? Mm. So not as many people out.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, I have no problems taking holiday days during the week at that time of year.
Yeah.
And make it a 4-day weekend or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I got three trips coming up, so I'm looking forward to it.
See? Tis the season. Where's your third trip?
Well, one is going to be Sandbanks for Thanksgiving weekend. Not traveling. We're just camping.
Okay.
But there's one north of Sudbury. There's one that's going to be in Algonquin Park. Mm-hmm. And then over Thanksgiving weekend, it's Sandbanks.
Ba-da-ba-da-bum. Mm-hmm. Awesome.
See if I can get some more poison ivy on my legs.
Sounds like a challenge.
The only place I've ever had poison ivy is at Sandbanks. And it's because the leaves were gone. It was in the fall. All the leaves fell off. So the little poison ivy sticks are poking up. And one of the kids threw a frisbee into the woods. So I went and got the frisbee. And it's like...
So...
So this it's year, not just the leaves you get poison ivy on your legs.
This year, if the frisbee goes into the forest...
It's gone. For good.
The forest now owns the frisbee. That's a rule.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, looking forward to some fall paddling this year. Yoo-hoo!
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'll be paddling at New Year's again this year.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Start your 12 months of paddling again.
Remind me. I got to get some of that wax for my dry suit zipper.
Oh.
Yeah, because that's a bit of a bitch to open by yourself some days. pretty sad when you, that's why they say you got to take somebody paddling with you, especially in the colder weather. Reminders. Always make sure that you got a paddling buddy. No, so that he can undo the zipper so you can get out of that damn thing.
So your zipper's on the back and not on the front?
No, it goes from the upper shoulder.
Oh, okay.
Upper right shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
Across the body down to the left hip.
So just to reach it.
So to get it sometimes hard it's to get to. Hard to get it sliding.
Yeah.
Right? It's just that tough to open.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is, I mean, good, but there's a stuff that you can rub on the zipper to make it slide easier.
Slide easier and help with waterproofness.
Yeah. So I need to get one. Remind me that. Write it down somewhere, would you? Because.
You remind me and I'll remind you.
I'll remind you. You're supposed to remind me of something. Do you remember what it was? let's head over to the UK for a second, or a minute, or a couple. Over in the UK, there's a cove with views of Devon's rolling hills. Might sound like an idyllic place to spend a morning, but if you look a little closer, things at Kingsbridge Estuary are not as perfect as they first seem. Something is afoot. Old toothbrushes, coat hangers, lighters, used fishing gear litter the coastline. Despite being far from any cafes and only accessible via kayak, coffee cups are strewn across its shingles. None of the plastic will biodegrade. Instead, it will break up into smaller and smaller pieces.
Is this stuff that was dumped at sea and rolls ashore?
No, just coming down with the currents, pushed into this cove where people don't go. Microplastics then make their way into our ecosystem and even our food chain when they are eaten by birds, fish, and other wildlife. There is an organization called Odyssey Innovation is trying to change that. The firm takes plastic collected at beach cleans or gathered by community groups, as well as waste from harbors, and recycles it. It has now started to paddle for plastics, using kayaks to remove tons of litter from parts of the coast that are otherwise impossible to reach. It came about quite naturally as we were finding all this plastic, says Claire from Odyssey. We realized there were lots of coves that you can't access by walking, so you have to access them another way. Even with a boat, you sometimes can't pull up under the shallow shores. So we realized kayaks would be perfect because you can pull up anywhere and take plastic away on them. The group finds all kind of plastic waste, but ropes, nets, polystyrene, plastic bottle tops, and cans are the most common. Anything plastic you can think of, I feel like we've found, she says. Kind of becomes a bit of a treasure hunt, not necessarily a good treasure hunt, she adds, but at least you know it's being removed and hopefully repurposed, or at least removed from the shoreline. It's easy for the group to pick up the larger items that wash up, but microplastics prove trickier to clean. Picking up a handful of driftwood, Gary says, in amongst all this natural material, there are thousands of pieces of microplastic. You've got nurdles. Word of the day, nurdles. And not just me calling you a nerd. The base of all molded plastics. That's how they get transported. The little circular nurdles.
Oh, yeah. The little ball bearing type pieces of plastic.
So by definition, nurdles are, by definition, a microplastic because they are less than 5 millimeters in size. Nurdles are melted down and made into many plastic items, from clothes to cars, food wrappers to artificial Christmas trees. It takes roughly 600 nurdles to create one small plastic disposable water bottle.
Wow.
Nurdle sounds like a Muppet or something. Or one of those, like a cuddly fad toy or something, right?
Yeah.
There are literally hundreds of particles of plastics mixed in amongst this natural material, and as you dig down, you start finding more of it. That is what it's like on every stretch of the coastline all around the UK, and dare I say, all around the globe. Odyssey has so far collected 22 tons of plastic and other waste from the South Devon coast using its kayaks.
That's something.
From the South Devon coast.
Huh.
22 tons from that place alone. Items are then repurposed, with some of it even being used to create new kayaks, which can be used to remove more litter.
Circle of life.
Right? It's quite special that it's fully circular, Claire says. It also helps lots of community groups across the Southwest to help them get into harder places that are harder to reach. It's a shame there is so much rubbish around, but it's also amazing that people can get to these places now and clear these plastics. That's what it's coming to, is you got to get in there and clear it all out.
Yeah, right? And you can see like Ontario Shoreline where the kids, I would take the kids, you know, searching for rocks and stuff. You see so many little bits and pieces of small plastic that are just mixed in with the on the beach and mixed in with a stone. And if you sweep away some sand, you can see the little bits and pieces of plastic all mixed in. It's everywhere. It's a problem.
And it's not like you can just take a vacuum out there and vacuum up
can't, the... No, you can get more sand giant, than plastic.
A giant beach vacuum. That's what you need. Yeah, and it's everywhere now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, we used to go down and look at the beach glass. You know, it's been there forever and just
so now
smooths
it's,
out.
Yeah.
But now you're thinking, well, what about the plastic? It's doing the same, but it's just breaking down into smaller bits.
Yeah.
But it's still there.
Yes.
Just because it's not a big old Javex bottle, it's still there.
You see,
made into smaller pieces.
I don't know if it was Nature of Things or I saw some program where they were on some island way down south somewheres and there was these dead bird and turtle carcasses that were rotting away, and you could see they flipped the carcass over, and you could see it's just a belly full of microplastics and plastic bits and pieces, and you know it's just that's what killed the animal, right?
Yep.
And it's a problem because there's the Great Ocean Gyre out in the Pacific where there's millions of tons of plastic that just collects there,
just floating around there.
So it's in the rivers or streams. It's in our bodies right now.
Yep.
So it's you can't get away from it. There's too much, and there's no real simple solution.
Unfortunately, that's the truth. There isn't, and I mean, you look at the history books, and plastic was the grand savior,
the god, right? Yeah, the
like,
God-given.
Oh, we're gonna do everything with plastic now. Well,
yeah.
Careful what you wish for. So,
and it's not easily recyclable either. Like, unfortunately, like. You're when you do recycling each week, like if you look at what is acceptable and what's not, like for example, all those takeout trays, the black plastic is not recyclable.
Really?
Yeah. Because it contaminates they want clean plastic going forward, right? So the black plastic can ruin a batch of plastic because you get this black stain in it, right?
Mm.
And there's a lot of other stuff too. Like there's the symbols go from 1 to 7, and there's only a few of them that are actually that continue on in life as plastic. The rest of it is, it's landfill or incinerator or whatever, right?
Yep. I remember when we lived out in Scarborough, we had to separate our papers from our plastics. And then I moved out here.
Yeah.
And so we were still doing that, right? And then we were sitting there one morning watching the garbage guy. He just grabs it and throws it all in
all
the same
in the
bin.
Same
and we're
spot.
Like,
whoa,
what are you doing? And he goes, you don't have to separate.
Yeah.
We separated at the plant.
Or it goes straight to the incinerator or a landfill.
Yeah, they separate it from the truck into the incinerator.
Exactly.
At the plant. So.
Yeah.
Good on Odyssey Innovation for doing this and repurposing it and remaking it into new things. So, but yeah, and all the people that are out there cleaning up all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an easy job. It's easy to collect the big stuff. Like when we do our trips up and down the river, we collect some of the big stuff and throw it in the canoe.
Yeah.
But it's all this fine stuff that's been there forever.
Yeah, you're not going to sit there with tweezers and pull out these little tiny pebbles of plastic.
Again, that sounds like a challenge.
Practice your chopstick skills.
Right? Okay, so let's get into something that may be a bit touchy.
Mm-hmm.
Massachusetts. Authorities are reminding canoeists and kayakers about the required use of life jackets. According to the Massachusetts law, all canoeists and kayakers must wear a life jacket while on the water from September 15th through May 15th. That was a big old spelling boo-boo on my behalf. 15th. September 15th through to May 15th. And Massachusetts isn't the only state that does this. There's a few of them that do this.
And we've talked about a couple of states that are changing the rules just because it's public safety, right? Too many people are drowning. So
in Massachusetts, children under the age of 12 must wear a U.S. Coast Guard approved life jacket while on a boat that is underway. From September 15th to May 15th, canoeists, kayakers are required to wear a life jacket. Personal watercraft users and water skiers must always wear a life jacket. According to the U.S. Coast Guard, 377 people who died in 2023 were caused by drowning. Out of those who drowned, 87%, 319 of them, were not wearing a life jacket.
There you go. So who knows how many of those could have survived.
Right? You hear about that guy who fishermen found?
Yeah.
11 hours he was treading water.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, I couldn't tread water.
Like, I could not do that.
Well, apparently he was holding on to a bucket, and that was the only thing that was giving him flotation.
And it was something he found. So what was it? It was, what state did he come out of? He was on the Great Lakes. And anyways, wherever
he was on Lake Erie.
Lake Erie.
Cleveland. I think
he was out of Cleveland. Yeah. So he had paddled out there to do some fishing. He took on some water into his kayak.
Yeah.
He didn't have a device to pump it out. And so he said his kayak quickly took on water and got away from him. So that was gone. So he didn't have a life jacket. All he had on him, it was the shorts that he was wearing.
Yeah.
He had no shirt, no whatever, right? And he happened to come across, he said he tried to swim ashore a couple times. And he said at one point he was within 20 yards, but then there was a rip and it pulled him back out into the lake again. And at that point he found a bucket that he used as his only flotation. So he held it upside down and filled it with air, and that was his only flotation. So he was in the lake all night long.
From, what did they say, like 8:30 to 6:30?
So his girlfriend lost contact with him at 6:30.
Right, so then it was 8:30 that they found him the next morning.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it was a couple of fishermen just happened to be out there. They happened to pick the right spot to go fishing. They heard somebody yelling.
Yeah.
They look over, they see an arm, and, oh, buddy.
Yeah.
You want me to call 911? No, call my girlfriend.
Tell her I'm okie dokie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All night long. I guess if I found the bucket, I just found some way, but can you imagine trying to stay awake all night long and stay afloat? And he said a couple times he did go under before he found the bucket.
But you know what the good thing about this story is?
He survived.
Besides that, it was in Lake Erie, not like anywhere where there's sharks. Because that's all I would have thought about all night.
Well, and Lake Erie is a rather shallow lake. If it was Superior or Lake Ontario, he would have just hypothermia and died, right?
Oh, huge hypothermia.
So Lake Erie is relatively shallow, so it doesn't have... It warms up over summer, right? Mm-hmm. So what was this? It was just within like 5 days ago this happened.
Something like that.
Lucky guy. Lucky
guy. Life jackets do work.
I know. Can you imagine how easy that would have been if he just had a life jacket on him and he could have been floating
on his back, catch a couple of Z's.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
You know? But anyway, so that isn't the touchy bit. That leads into the touchy bit.
Yes.
From September 4th, 2024, till November 4th, so you got a month and a few days and...
A little bit left.
Transport Canada is seeking feedback on the mandatory use of PFDs, life jackets, for individuals on board recreational vessels. So this was a big hot topic last year.
Yes, it was.
Where people, you can't make me wear.
But they're in the feedback phase. They're looking for input from the public to tell them the whys and why nots of what they should be doing.
Right.
And so... reach out publicly. The public needs to reach out and tell us their stories and give us ways to manipulate the rules, because something's going to come in.
Mm-hmm.
Something is coming, and they're looking for input about
that's going to make as many people happy.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
So they did an online survey, which received, like, I think it was 2019, received approximately 2,000 responses over a 4-month period.
Which is not a lot of interaction, but a lot of people might not have known about it.
47.8% of the respondents reported they always wear a PFD or life jacket while boating. The results varied widely depending on the respondents' reported skill level, type of vessel they operated. However, participants across all skill levels generally agreed that not wearing some form of flotation device while boating was irresponsible.
Huh.
And see, I think that's where it breaks down. I don't think people have the problem with bringing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a lot of them have a problem with when they have to wear it.
Exactly.
Right? On-site observations were conducted during 2021 boating season at different bodies of water. During these observations, boating safety officers visited 10 marinas across the country on a biweekly basis to observe and record PFD life jacket wear rates among recreational boaters on different vessel types engaged in different activities. So it's not like they're all hovering around Toronto Harbor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're right across the country. The observers use a variety of tools to track weather conditions, which may have impacted wear rates, wind speed, water temperatures, etc., and recorded any observed changes these conditions had on behavior. Results from these observations were compared with the online survey to develop a situational portrait of Canadians' use of PFDs. Key takeaways found that 34% of boaters recorded during the observations wore a PFD or life jacket. The wear rate for minors under the age of 18 were nearly double that of adults, 67 versus 29%.
There you go.
Children 6 to 12 of age were found to have the highest wear rate, 75%.
Still only 75%, 6 to 12 years old.
So why is your 6-year-old...
Now, it depends. Are you on a powerboat?
Yeah.
Are you
and in see, a... that's the question.
Right?
They need to
break it down
break it all down more.
Because my kids, if they're in the canoe, they always have a life jacket on.
Yep. If they're on a yacht.
Exactly. Yeah.
Women were found to have a slightly higher wear rate than men, 38 versus 31%. Wear rates varied across vessel types, but were found to be higher on board small vessels as opposed to larger vessels.
Yeah, I can see that.
Results for human-powered vessels ranged widely with higher wear rates for boaters using kayaks, 78%, but much lower rates for those using canoes, 41%. That's weird. Well, yes and no, because it's if I don't have a... I'll say I always wear my PFD, but if I have it off for some reason... It's in front of me on gear or on the floor. But in a kayak, where are you going to put it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, yeah, if I'm taking a jacket off
or putting a jacket on, I might take it off and then put the life jacket back on again. But in my
experience... But if you're traveling,
it's
easier to throw it in the floor.
To see people out on lakes and rivers in Algonquin, Clarney, whatever, I almost always see people in kayaks wearing life jackets.
Yeah.
Almost always.
Yeah.
And in canoes... Almost never, unless they're kids.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a parent with a kid, the parent would have it on. But if it's just a bunch of young adults, they generally, as a general rule, it's very rare to see people with life jackets on, I find.
Passengers were found to be much more likely, 46 times more likely, to wear a PFD life jacket when the operator was wearing one.
There you go.
So if you get in somebody's boat
and they're wearing one.
Oh,
I should put one on.
I guess I should put one on.
Yeah. If the guy who's driving the boat doesn't have one on, it's like, I don't want to be the geek that's not wearing it.
Right.
Or that is wearing
it. That is wearing one. Yeah. Hey, nerd. They analyzed the research projects to develop criteria to consider when developing options for mandatory wear requirements. Of PFDs in certain circumstances when boating recreationally. These proposed criteria are based on three categories. Age requirements. Now, we've talked about this before last year when this was a big hot item. Mm-hmm. And I said, if you get them to wear it mandatory, up like with bike helmets until you're 16 or whatever it is.
It becomes normal.
It becomes normal.
Yeah.
Vessel length and vessel type.
Yeah.
I think canoes, kayaks, and stuff like that, I'd be more likely to say, they should be wearing them at all times.
Absolutely. Because they're bigger very boats, unstable craft, right?
Yeah. Bigger boats, I think this may have changed. Don't quote me on this whatsoever. My parents used to own one of those bigger boats you could sleep on.
Mm-hmm.
there had to be a life jacket for everybody, but it didn't have to be right there.
It could be under a seat.
It could be under a seat or something.
Yeah.
So my sort of thing, my idea would be, okay, it's got to be reachable quickly. Mm-hmm. So like it's got to be on the seat beside you,
yeah,
sitting on it or wearing it.
Mm-hmm.
Not, okay, well, let's open up this cupboard, lift the seat.
Somebody find life jackets. Yeah, I don't know where they are.
Right? So the main goal of any approach would be to reduce deaths among boaters at greatest risk. Final options may be included in regulatory updates in the small vessels regulations. Any potential requirements would only apply while a vessel is moving, so as not to impact other activities like anchoring the boat and swimming.
Yeah, makes sense.
Given the complexity of this issue, we may consider a combination of different criteria based on data and public feedback.
They want some feedback.
They want the feedback. Because otherwise, they're just going to say, well, no one really cares, so...
Yeah, we'll just make it...
We'll just do a big old...
across the board.
Yeah, and that's when people are going to bitch and complain. Yeah. Well, you had your chance.
Yeah.
So if you go to letstalktransportation.ca, you can scroll down, and there's a marine safety picture. Click that. And then when that you go to that new page, on the right-hand side is a little tab that says, making personal flotation devices mandatory. And it's under open consultations. So click all that. It'll give you more information on what they're looking at. And then a link to the survey you can fill out and help them make the decision on, hey, yeah, you know what? When the kiddies should wear them,
yep,
people should wear them at certain time, like yeah, after 5 at night or whatever, 6 at night,
mm-hmm,
and before, you know, sun up, sundown, they should be wearing them, or, you know, that sort of deal. And yeah, make your voice heard, you know, help them make an informed decision and not try to piss everybody off.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. That's what we're here for. Singapore, because, you know, we're there all the time.
Exactly.
Yeah. People's Association is set to launch its first Passion Wave outpost in Bayfront in 2025. And if you're like me when I'm reading this, I'm thinking, who are the People's Association? What is Passion Wave?
Yeah.
And what is Bayfront? There are currently 6 Passion Wave facilities throughout Singapore, each providing affordable water recreational activities. The upcoming Bayfront outpost will offer kayaking, when did it become changed from paddle boats to pedal boats?
Well, I wonder if they're talking about the ones with the little...
Yeah. Yeah. You
your bicycle
pedal them. Yeah.
Yeah.
But those were paddle boats.
Well, I think they're called paddle boats here. Or maybe over there they're called pedal boats. It's
I'm just seeing it more and more, pedal boats.
Dialect, yeah.
Anyway, sorry, just to go off topic for a second there.
I want to rant about this.
Yeah. Bring back paddle boats. Pedal boats and dragon boating amid stunning views of the bay. It will also be the first water sports satellite facility in the Marina Bay waterfront,
yeah,
promenade vicinity. So seeing that nice downtown, it'd be like downtown Toronto, sort of, but better. Senior Minister of State for Ministry of Defense and Ministry of Manpower, Zaki Mohammed, said in a statement, the new PA Passion Wave outpost at Bayfront is an exciting development that will add vibrancy and transform Marina Bay into a people's bay, which is what you want. You want, yeah, people to come down and enjoy the water, right? You walk around, you're shopping all day, like... You need recreation, too.
Exactly. And the recreation pulls people into the business district and,
right,
and into the tourism districts and so on. It's all about money anyway.
Yeah. So. We are creating a dynamic space where Singaporeans from all walks of life across Singapore, including those working in the business district, will have direct access to recreational activities such as kayaking and dragon boating in these waters. By making our iconic waterfront accessible, we are not just adding a new facility, we are creating opportunities for community bonding and active lifestyles in the heart of the city.
Cool.
So Passion Wave, and the Passion Wave, the PA, is capitalized.
So it's People's Association.
Passion Wave. celebrates 5 decades, 50 years this year, of connecting communities of all ages and abilities through accessible and affordable water sports and waterfront lifestyle activities. In 1974, the People's Association established the PA Adventure Club at Changi Point, marking the beginning of canoe clubs and sea sports centers at Pungol Point, Sembawang, and Kallang River.
Good job pronouncing.
You like that? I'm getting better.
I don't think you got it right, but still,
it doesn't matter.
It flowed very smoothly.
Right? Right? Fake it till you make it, baby. Hey, here's this. I'm just starting to breeze through these names. Well, you know, I've just made them up.
Yes, exactly.
These efforts evolved into the current 6 modern and well-equipped Passion Wave outlets, including 3 reservoirs and 3 sea outlets, promoting a broader range of waterfront and meaningful community programs with water sports. Yeah, if you go into Google and just Google Passion Wave and then the number 50, it'll come right up to this site, and you can go on there and see everything they offer. And if you're going to Singapore, you might want to take advantage of it.
Yeah, exactly. Right? It's cheap, a great tourist opportunity.
Cheap waterfront activities. Yeah. So you can get out there, and it'd be, like I say, just renting a canoe or kayak down at Toronto Harbor and paddling around, right?
And just think, if it's a great opportunity, like a vacation, can you imagine being able to kind of tick that off your bucket list of I paddled in Singapore or anywhere so you might want to have gone, right?
Right. And the last one I got, you know, it's coming up end of October.
Mm-hmm.
What happens at the end of October? Halloweenies.
Mm-hmm.
And every year, winding up to Halloween, is all the witch paddles.
Yes.
Has become a thing.
Yeah, we've reported on this every year about all the stand-up paddle boards and all the witches are out there paddling and so on.
Just Google it, and there's probably an event near you.
Yeah, and it's getting bigger and bigger every year.
So, which exactly why this came up. The witches of Portland will not paddleboard down the Willamette River together this Halloween season. At least not in a large organized event unless a witch fairy godmother appears to take over the popular event. In a post on Facebook last month, Ginny Kaufman, organizer of Portland Stand-Up Paddleboard Witches on the Willamette, said she would no longer run the paddle due to safety concerns. Smart on her behalf.
Mm-hmm.
Given the expected number of participants this year, as well as recent tragic events, and after speaking with the Coast Guard, who understandably have safety concerns about the event, it has become clear that I can no longer and should no longer on my own organize this event on an informal and volunteer basis as I have been, she writes. The event started as a fun idea I had for a few of us, local PDX stand-up paddleboarders and Halloween enthusiasts. And it has grown far beyond what we could have imagined or even planned for, to an estimated 300-plus people participating every year. Could you imagine, like, Alan? We talk about Alan going out.
He does
and
the night.
And he does these
Toronto Island paddling.
Yeah. Or they're going out for a couple of different spots.
And yeah.
He has his rules. Okay. If you're coming, you have to have a sea kayak. If you're coming, you have to have lights, you have to have safety gear, you have to have a life jacket, and all these. If you show up without any of these things, you are not joining.
Yeah, you're not with us.
And he gets maybe 10 people.
Mm-hmm.
Now imagine
doing that with 300
with
plus.
300 people.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like
it becomes unruly, uncontrollable, and if there's any incidents or accidents, and if you are the organizer,
they look at one person.
They blame you and point fingers at you. It's like, use your event.
So according to Kaufman, while she has attempted to educate participants about paddleboard safety, each year we see too many people with no PFDs, no leashes, and even some that are obviously not experienced paddlers.
Hmm.
That's an issue. Kaufman said she was looking for a professional event organizer to take over the annual witch paddle with the tools and experience to organize such an event, one that has liability insurance and can enforce rules regarding the required safety equipment. I mean, if you got 300 people and you got a few, her and a few volunteers trying to tell people, It's like herding cats, right?
Well, it's not just that, too. Oh, so like herding cats, but you're also going to get people yelling back at you. It's like, no, I have a right to...
Yeah.
I have a right to drown.
I can do what I want.
I can do what I want. If yeah. I want to drown, I'm going to drown.
She says, until that happens, she urged paddling witches to gather some witchy friends and choose your own date and time for your own mini witch paddle. While she said she was a little sad to be leaving the job she created for herself, she was also relieved to step out of the spotlight and away from any potential liability in case of something going wrong.
It makes sense.
You know what? Very smart on her behalf yeah. to realize that, yeah. you know what? There's enough people out. And unfortunately, all it takes is one thing.
Yeah, one person. Somebody inexperienced. It's, you know, you don't know if people are going to be drinking alcohol or not or right. doing anything other recreational activities. And if they're experienced, inexperienced, if they have the right gear, if they have the right common sense, you know, they're not going to be out there and, you know, causing havoc. And just a simple thing, too, is if, you know, you're all these people are out there on set-up paddle boards and some yahoo on a jet ski decides to rip through the group, and it's like it's not worth the stress, strain, and anxiety of trying to herd that many cats all at once.
Yeah. There. Speaking of, somebody was just charged with he was reckless with a jet ski and ran over and injured somebody on his stand-up paddleboard.
Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah, so good on her for realizing this, and hopefully somebody does come in with all the tools
yeah.
to make this a more,
yeah.
I don't want to say professional,
yeah, event, but at least
a more regulated.
Regulated with yeah. with insurance and
yeah.
with liability waivers. And
yeah.
You sign the paperwork, you can't join up.
Yeah, right? And come back and
mm-hmm.
you know, maybe call her back in to help out. And,
yeah.
Because it sounds like it's something she enjoyed doing, yeah. so. Yeah. Could you imagine? Yeah, just to me and 10 of my friends.
300? And then, what's going
yeah,
on?
Yeah, because I'm pretty sure she said 2017 was when it started.
Mm-hmm.
And then, boom, all of a sudden,
yeah,
300 plus people.
Well, a lot of people out. Looking at it going, that looks like so much fun.
Right?
And it does look fun.
Yeah.
But you get too many people out there and yeah. a lot of stuff can go wrong.
Yes. So, good decision.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I got.
Yeah, I don't have anything beneficial or good to add.
I will let you know about canoe trips this year.
Yes.
So, yes. So there's that. I might even do one. So one late November? I might do one in November as well, late
yeah.
November. See, that's the thing is, because our whole... I remember I was telling you last episode, like, I get all my ducks in a row and somebody randomly kicks.
yeah,
I've
yeah.
had more ducks kicked this week than I can show. I swear, I'm getting... My ducks in a row, stop kicking them, t-shirt. I got to come yeah. up with something like that I can yeah. put on a t-shirt. Cause, so like, all our... We were supposed to be in Utah and Colorado right now, Pat.
Oh, yes.
For
yes.
somebody's birthday and mm-hmm. Our 30th wedding anniversary.
Yeah.
It's coming up, so... But all of that got canceled because our ducks got
yeah,
chaos mode.
Yes.
So my vacation times that I should have been taking is still there.
Yeah.
So it's just a matter of organizing.
Exactly, yeah.
We's organized. We got to be organized.
Yeah.
So that's all I got this week.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like a... short episode this week.
But not really. It's still an hour.
It's an hour. Okay, if you insist. I think time is a conspiracy.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Next week, conspiracy theory. We should have like a conspiracy theory section of the show.
Yeah. That'd we can great. Talk about...
This week's conspiracies. A science section, a yeah. conspiracy section.
Yeah, Sasquatch section.
Sam-squatch, yeah. make me a sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sandwiches and sangria with Sasquatch.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Missing boaters.
Right?
Sasquatch in a canoe. You think Sasquatch would paddle a stand-up paddleboard? Need a big
one. No, he seems more like a rowboat kind of guy.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah.
Alrighty. Good show. Fun as always.
Yeah.
If you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. So if you're having problems downloading our podcast because the ghost and machine didn't put it up there, just go over to YouTube.
It'll be there.
And it'll be there. Download or stream all our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com and you can stream or download all our episodes there. And while you're listening, just hit the old button and check out our store. Yeah. If you enjoyed the podcast, please share it with friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.